Good day, and welcome to the quarterly AEON Payments call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Kimberly Cutler, AEON Payments Manager. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, all, and welcome to the quarterly AEON Payments call. I am Kimberly Cutler, the AEON Payments Manager and host of today's call. So thank you all for taking time out today to join actually our last AEON Payments call of 2020. So thank you guys again. And the purpose of today's presentation is to provide recent announcements and insight into the payment process on the following agenda topics. And those topics include the ePay file, changing payment type, prior earnings, AEON certification of services or the cost form versus the proof of relationship or the POR form. And, of course, we want to make sure that we provide you with the different resources available to you as an AEON. And at the end of the call, we will have an open session for questions and answers. And first, what we're going to get started with is we do have a couple of announcements that we want to share with you all today. This is just a friendly reminder that in order to transition to the new ticket program agreement, or the TPA, employment networks must sign and submit the request for application, so your RFA. And that deadline to submit your signed RFA with the required documentation is tomorrow, October 28th. So I just want to say that again. The deadline for submitting your signed request for application with the required documentation is tomorrow, October 28th. And you want to make sure that you submit that information to tpahelp@ssa.gov. And Adele, I will ask if you could put that email address in the chat. So again, that's tpahelp@ssa.gov. You can also contact that email address if you have any questions, but please just make sure that you get that signed RFA with the required documentation in before tomorrow, October 28th. Failure to submit your signed RFA with the required information could result in termination of your contract, so please make sure you get that information in. The second announcement that we have today, earlier today, SSA actually sent out a Gov delivery message with information concerning the temporary policy change to the 24-month age claim rule. And what I want to do at this point is turn the call over to Katie Schreinberger, who will actually provide more information about this temporary change. Katie?
Thanks, Kim. Good afternoon, everyone. So like Kim just said, we sent out a Gov delivery message at 10 o'clock this morning. If you do not have it in your inbox, please let us know that so we can make sure that you get all of our policy emails. Effective November 1st, 2020, employment networks will be able to receive payments for claim months back to a fixed date, which is the claim month of April 2018. Under the current 24-month aged claim policy, AEONs must request a payment no later than 24 months following the month the ticket holder's work and earnings meet the criteria for Social Security makeup payment. This policy will be suspended from November 1st, 2020 to May 1st, 2021 to make it possible for AEONs to receive payments for claim months that might have been affected by the COVID pandemic. So to reinstate that, so normally it's a rolling 24-month policy, so 24 months from the month that we are currently adjudicating claims, we will go back and that is the latest claim month we will pay. Because of COVID, we have made it so that we'll go back as far as April of 2018 for claim months we will pay for your AEON payment claims. And this is a temporary suspension of the policy. It is going to be effective on November 1st and go through May 1st. If you have any questions about this policy change, you can contact AEON Payments Help Desk, that's all one word, AEON Payments Help Desk at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And I'm going to hand it back over to Kim to finish the presentation.
Thank you so much, Katie. And now we will go ahead and continue with the other agenda topics for the call. The next slide here, we talk about the ePay file. And just wanted to make a note that TPM will start processing the next ePay file very soon. And we will make sure that there is an announcement in the portal letting you all know once we start processing ePay. But we do have a few reminders, as we always do when it comes to processing ePay. Please just remember that the file is processed in order of SSNs, not DUNs. We do get some ENs that call early on when we start processing ePay with just questions about the fact that they haven't received any payments yet. But please just remember that if you are eligible to be on the ePay file, that it is based on SSN. So you may receive some payments early on, and then you may not receive payments into the middle of the file, and then some maybe towards the end. But again, it's because it's based on SSNs and not DUNs. And please remember, in order to receive ePay payments, ENs must have passed their annual services and supports review. You must not be on in a hold status or terminated, of course. But those are just a couple reminders for the ePay file. And again, we will start processing that ePay file soon. The next agenda topic we're going to focus on is changing payment type. One of the reasons why we wanted to include this information in today's presentation is because we have received some concerns with ENs requesting phase two milestone payments, and the payments are being denied because the beneficiary is no longer receiving a cash federal benefit. So we wanted to just provide a little bit of information that will hopefully answer your questions. So when ENs submit for phase two milestones and earnings are at least substantial gainful activity or SGA level, but the benefits in the SSA database are in suspense due to work and earnings, what TPM will do is we're going to deny the claim. We're going to deny the phase two milestone request, and you will see a denial reason of outcome period entered. Milestones can't be paid. And what will happen is once we deny that request for that phase two milestone, we will recreate a new claim as an outcome payment and make the payment. So as long as all of the payment criteria are met, we will deny your phase two milestone claim. If the earnings are at SGA level and the benefits are in suspense, we will deny that claim, but we will recreate the claim and pay it as an outcome. So what we're not going to do is just deny it, deny your phase two because the benefits are in suspense if all other criteria are met. So I just wanted to provide a little bit of information about how we handle those cases. And if you look at the next slide, we actually provide a scenario of this. So if an EN submits a payment request or EN submits payment request for phase two milestone two at claim month February 2020, but per SSA database, the beneficiary did not receive a federal disability benefit for that month, for the month of February 2020. So in other words, the benefits are in suspense, right? So the payment request for phase two milestone two will be denied. As mentioned on the previous slide, we will deny that. But then TPM will create a new work case for outcome one at the same claim month of February 2020, and so outcome one, we will pay that. So, again, it doesn't always work that way because, again, all of the earnings information, all of the criteria must be met for that payment. But as long as it's a phase two milestone payment and the benefits, and so the earnings are at SGA level and the benefits are in suspense for that exact same claim month, we will, again, deny your phase two milestone request, but we will recreate the claim or create the claim as an outcome. So there's nothing that the ENs would have to do at that point. But please remember that scenario can only take place if the benefits are in suspense due to work or earnings, right? So if you submit for a phase two milestone payment and it's denied and you see that denial reason, what we said earlier, that the outcome period entered, milestones can't be paid. If you see that we deny that phase two milestone, but you don't see that we paid you for the outcome, then that just means that there was some part of the earnings criteria that was not satisfied. But we just wanted to shine a little light on how those cases are processed. And if you move to the other slide, what we want to talk about was phase two milestones and the outcome period. We do get questions centered around that as well. So please note that the outcome period begins when the first month federal disability benefits are no longer payable due to work or earnings. And once a ticket has entered the outcome period, no further milestone payments can be made from the start of that outcome period onwards. But a thing to also remember that any unpaid milestone months might be payable in the future as part of a reconciliation payment. But those milestones can no longer be individually paid because even if the beneficiary payment status reverts to current pay. So the key takeaway here is that once an EN receives an outcome payment, so once they go into the outcome period, ENs are no longer eligible to receive any milestone payments individually. Those eligible or available milestone payments may be picked up in a reconciliation payment. And ENs do not have to request that reconciliation payment. That is something that will automatically take place or could automatically take place after the 12th outcome has been paid to the EN. So, again, just want you guys to remember that once they go into the outcome period, even if the benefits update or reverts back to current pay, which means they start receiving that cash benefit again, you will not be eligible to receive milestone payments because the outcome period was entered. Okay. Next, we move on to the topic of prior earnings. We do see a lot of denials that are happening because of prior earnings. You know that if a beneficiary earns trial work level within the 18 months prior to ticket assignment date, then some or all of the phase one milestone payments could be off the table. So what we encourage is that Ian should research prior work history to see if the beneficiary had trial work level or TWL earnings within the 18 months prior to the ticket assignment date. And again, like I mentioned, many EN overpayments are due to prior earnings posting after a phase one milestone payment has been made. So that's why we want to encourage ENs to try to get as much prior work history as they can before submitting for their first payment. And there are a couple of resources that could help ENs identify prior earnings. And those resources include the Benefits Planning Query, or the BPQI, pay stubs and employer-prepared earnings statements, and also the work number. So those are a few resources that could possibly help ENs find out if the beneficiary worked in the 18 months prior to ticket assignment and if they had trial work level earnings. The first resource we mentioned was the Benefits Planning Query, or the BPQI. So what you can do is you can ask the beneficiary to contact their local SSA office to request a BPQI. And just note that an EN may request this information by submitting two of the SSA-3288 forms. These are consent for release of information that have been signed by the beneficiary. So you have to make sure that the SSA-3288 form is signed by the beneficiary. So the first, because I said there were two, so the first SSA-3288 form authorizes the release of Social Security records. The second form authorizes the release of Internal Revenue Service earnings records. And just remember, both releases must contain the beneficiary's Social Security number or the claim number, and it must have the signature of the beneficiary. And what we've provided is more, if you would like to have more information about the BPQI, as you can see here on the slide, you actually can go to this site here, this link here will take you there so that you can actually find out more information about the BPQI, but it is definitely something that we would encourage you as an EN to find out about, to see if the beneficiary had prior work history. Just make sure when you're requesting it, that you're submitting the required information with the signature of and Social Security number of the beneficiary. Okay, the second resource we talked about was, of course, pay stubs and employer-prepared earnings statement. So what you can do is request previous pay stubs directly from the ticket holder. So during your intake process of required documentations and things, documentation and information that you would like from your beneficiary, of course, you're going to ask the beneficiary about prior work. And so if they can provide previous pay stubs, that will show you, again, that they worked, but more importantly, if they actually earned a trial work level amount. And if pay stubs are unavailable, so if your ticket holder does not have the pay stubs, then they can obtain an employer-prepared earnings statement directly from their employer. So, again, these are just a couple of things that you can be proactive about, and again, just trying to make sure that you're capturing prior earnings, trial work level earnings, again, to see what, if any, phase one milestones are on the table. And again, you can request this information either as part of the intake process or during follow-up consultation once the ticket is assigned. But you want to make it a part of the process, again, just so you can get out in front, you can complete the 18-month look back to using this information, and then again, it will show you all the possibility of what phase one milestone ones are or are not available to you as an EN. The last resource we talked about was the work number. I'm sure you guys are all familiar with the work number, and it is a user paid verification of employment. So the information from the work number uses employer's payroll data, which is typically updated each pay period. And EANs can use the work number as a verified earning source for payments, and we get that a lot where EANs are submitting the work number as evidence of earnings. But again, it can also help determine phase one milestone exclusions. So you want to reach out and get that information as well. But please, there's a note to make sure that SSA may still have additional payment data. So this is a helpful resource, but we're also using the information that's in SSA's database. So there may be, a combination of earnings or just different information that could also help, but these are just resources that could be available to you as an EN. Again, so the work number you can use to help make the payment, right, to see with the earnings information, but you can also use it before submitting for your phase one milestones to see if it will exclude any of those milestones, because it may show that the beneficiary had trial work level earnings within that 18 months prior to ticket assignment date. So just really good resources that we would encourage you to take the time out, research it, and use that information provided. We're going to move on to the next agenda topic where, again, we do get a lot of questions from ENs surrounding the EN certification of services form or the cost and the proof of relationship form or the POR. Right, so they're both very valid forms. We still use the forms in processing payments. They just serve two different purposes. So we want to make sure. So we want to make sure that you guys have a clear understanding of when to submit which form for which payment. So when requesting payments for a beneficiary who unassigned their ticket, ENs must submit a detailed list of services provided to the beneficiary throughout the duration of ticket assignment, right? So let me just explain it. So if the ticket, from the time you develop your IWP and the ticket is assigned to you to the date that the beneficiary unassigned the ticket, all that time in between those two dates, when you submit your certification of services, we need to see those services that covers that entire period. And so services should be documented on the cost form and submitted with your payment request. And this, again, for purposes of payments, the certification of services or the cost form is submitted when the beneficiary has unassigned the ticket and the EN is now requesting payment for that ticket holder. So you want to make sure that you're submitting that. So here we've provided an example. So ticket assigned to Kim Cut Ian on January 12, 2015, and unassigned by the beneficiary on February 7, 2020. If Kim Cut Ian submits for payment for a claim month after the unassignment date, which was the February 2020, that Kim Cut must submit a completed cost with a list of services provided to the beneficiary between January 2015 through February 2020. And those dates, as you can see, is when the ticket was assigned and when the ticket was unassigned. So, and because SSA may continue to make payments to an EN when the ticket has been unassigned by the beneficiary, but you, in addition to the earnings requirement being met, you must also make sure that you submit a completed cost form with that payment request. So that's where your cost comes in for payments for unassigned tickets. Now, when it comes to the proof of relationship or your POR form, ENs must provide proof of relationship with beneficiaries when requesting payments for Phase 1 milestones 1 through 3 using earnings from the work number, employer-prepared earnings statement, or earnings already proven in SSA's database. So just make sure when you're submitting for payment, and if you have the work number, because we know that provides earnings information, right? If you're submitting an employer-prepared earnings statement, that provides earnings. Or if once you go into the portal, you receive the message, earnings already proven. In those cases, when you submit for a Phase 1 milestone 1 through 3, in addition to the work number, the employee-prepared earnings statement, and the earnings already proven in SSA database, ENs must submit must provide proof of relationship. And proof of relationship is determined by pay stubs or a completed POR form with a list of services provided to the beneficiary during the requested milestone period. So let me just note, if you're submitting a pay stub as your evidence of earnings, your pay stubs will also serve as proof of relationship. So they are, in other words, pay stubs are a standalone when you're requesting your Phase 1 milestones 1 through 3. But if you do not have pay stubs, and mentioned earlier, if you're using a different verification of earnings, then you must complete the completed POR with the list of services. And the difference here, we mentioned the certification of services when you submit it must provide the list of services for the entire ticket assignment period. But when you're requesting for Phase 1 milestones 1 through 3, your POR just needs to provide a list of services for the requested milestone period. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't just put everything that you provided. We would rather have too much information than to not have enough. So the key thing to remember, though, certification of services is for the entire duration of the ticket assignment. Your POR or proof of relationship form is for the particular milestone period that you're requesting. So we also have an example for POR. So duty EN does not have the beneficiary's pay stubs, but submits a payment request for Phase 1 Milestone 2 for claim month April of 2020. And so they're asking for Phase 1 Milestone 2 for the claim month of April 2020, and they're using earnings from February, March, and April. So those are the months where you actually have the earnings information, but your claim month is going to be for April 2020, and you're submitting your payment based on earnings already proven in SSA's database. So when you went to submit your payment request, this is the message that came up, and so now you're ready to submit for your Phase 1 Milestone 2. But the duty EN must provide a completed POR form with the list of services provided from February 2020 to April 2020. That is your milestone period. So that is the difference. As you can see, the POR is going to have a shorter amount of time versus the certification of services. But, again, just make sure you remember that if you're not submitting pay stubs for your Phase 1 milestone 1, 2, 3, and you're using a different source to verify your earnings, then you must submit a completed POR form. And just a small reminder as well, during your milestone period, that ENs must perform monthly contact with beneficiary during this initial job acquisition phase or during your first milestone period. But just wanted to provide a little bit of light on the difference between the cost form and the POR form, but please remember they are both required to receive payments. It just depends if you're requesting payment for a ticket that has been unassigned by the beneficiary, then you would need to submit your cost form. And if you're submitting for payments for your phase one milestones 1 through 3 without pay stubs, then you need to submit a completed POR form, and that will cover your milestone period. So hopefully that kind of gives you guys a little better understanding of when to submit the forms. And that actually concludes the agenda topics, that part of the presentation. But what I would like to do, Sandy, if you don't mind, I would like to open the phone lines first to see if we have any questions from our participants.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. The first question comes from Frederick Eddington.
Okay. Hello.
Yes. I understand we can submit proof of income from the portal through the portal, but you mentioned the VPQY. The VPQY. How do you access that? You said we could submit that. Is that accessible to an EN?
Right, and as I mentioned a few slides back, I think it was on slide 8, I did provide the website, which is workworld.documentation on BPQI. You can actually go there and get a little bit more information about it, but in order to request the BPQI, you can do that, but you would have to submit two consent for release of information forms. And that is the SSA 3288 form. So, of course, we do not, we being TPM, we do not provide that information, but you can actually go look up the information so you can see what is included on the BPQI and what the, in addition, well, I explained the forms that you need, but you can actually go take a look at the forms.
Yeah, I also have one other question.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I have several individuals that I have access, or I have their check stubs, but they have not, well, I guess Social Security, their employee haven't submitted their income, I guess, to the IRS, and some of them is like, it's gone all 2 years, and they're working, and they're taken out of their check. They're taking out IRS, I mean, the company's taking out of their check. But they're not; it's not showing up on the portal as though these people are actually receiving an income that's being that the IRS is taking out of. I mean, what do you do about that? You got check stubs.
Okay, if you have your pay stubs for your payment request, you can submit your payment request using your pay stubs. So pay stubs are actually preferred. So if you have access to your client's pay stubs, then I would just request that you would go through the portal and you'll go through the process of what you need to do in order to print out a fax cover sheet so that you can fax in those pay stubs. And then we would just get that information, you know, and we would enter what we have from the pay stubs into the system to see if it would meet the earnings requirement. Then, of course, if all the other payment requirements are met, then we could make your payment. But definitely, if you have pay stubs, please send them in.
Okay, but what if it's showing that, okay, this person is in milestone, is in a milestone payment, and when I submit the payment, it won't take the payment because it doesn't show on the portal. Well, it doesn't show on the portal that the person is in. Okay, let me get this right.
In current pay. So it doesn't show. So let me just see. So the person is submitting, you know, they have the pay stubs, and so should, because of their earnings, should they be in what we now call outcome period? So should the benefits be suspended? But the record hasn't updated. Is that what you're?
And the record hasn't updated, and it's been a year, and some I have some has been a couple of years, and it haven't updated. Therefore, I can't submit the payment.
Right. Okay, I understand. And unfortunately, what we have is we have to pay. We make our payments, of course, from using SSA's database. There have been some delays in the field offices entering the information, entering the earnings information. Only thing I would do is have your beneficiary, you know, go to their local field office, contact their local field office, and just, you know, and try to check the status of where they are there. Because you're right, if you've received, you know, all of your available milestone payments and the benefits are still in current pay, then right, you're not going to be able to receive payments until the field office actually goes in and updates that information. But the only thing I can tell you to do at this point is just continue to have your beneficiary contact their local field office to see if we can get that information updated. And if you have any other questions, I would just encourage you could contact the EN Payments Help Desk, and we're going to provide that number shortly. But I would just make sure that send your beneficiary to have them contact their local field office and just kind of let them know what's going on.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you, sir.
If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. The next question comes from Michelle Katz.
Hello. Hi, Michelle. Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. I had a question regarding the first announcement that you mentioned, and I didn't catch the title of it, but regarding the suspension of the 24-month age claim rule.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so just had a question. I mean, and this might be a question for the ticket or the EN Payments Help Desk, but how would that – so, for example, we're working with a ticket holder, and this occurred where, you know, because of there were a couple different factors in play, but we had submitted a request for phase one milestone 4 for June 2018. It was outside of that 24-month age claim rule, so then we had to submit then for September 2018 because that fell within the 24-month age claim rule. And so just basically I wanted to kind of understand what should we expect in terms of getting, you know, having that new suspension of the 24-month age claim rule. How will that apply? Like, will we be able to get the payment back for June that we were supposed to receive? And then will that also adjust any future payments?
Okay. Well, I'll take a stab at it, but then I will definitely turn it over to Katie. But I would think, and she'll correct me if I'm wrong, because the new rule is effective November 1st, so that's mm-hmm. going to be moving forward, that we will go back to April 2018. But mm-hmm. for any cases or any months that were denied previously, then I would think that denial stands because we're only mm-hmm. going to apply the new rule to cases submitted after November 1st. Of this year. But Katie, I will ask if you wanted to shine a light or correct me if I'm wrong.
No, Kim, you said it perfectly. This is not retroactive. We're not going to go back and evaluate everyone's claims to see if you possibly could have gotten, you know, a claim now that it's the 24-month is being suspended. So this is effective November 1st for claims, November 1st. Forward, we're not going to do any kind of looking back. When you requested that payment at that time, that was the policy we were using. So that is the policy that's in effect. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go back in with older cases. We're only moving forward.
Yeah. Okay. I just want that's helpful. I, you know, wasn't aware of that when you first mentioned it. You know, and the reason I ask is because, you know, part of the factors involved in that is that, you know, because of COVID, we were closed. So it was a very, you know, I was wondering if that would factor in.
Yep. This is Katie again. This is mostly, you know, there was a time period when field office suspended performing cessations. You know, they were not taking actions on beneficiaries' records, right, to put them in suspense for work and earnings, which would allow you to receive an outcome payment, which was the previous question we were just talking about. So, you know, so looking at the record, right, at the time, you know, in April of 2020, right, there was no suspension in April of 2018 because the field office wasn't going back that far. So it is just to make it so that now that the field office is going back and they're doing the suspensions and they're doing the work and they expect to close that out shortly, we're just making it that something that wasn't previously on the record will now be on the record. It's mostly to impact outcome payments. It is not to, your example is something that was on the record, but you couldn't use it because of the 24-month rule. We're expecting there to be records that are available that were not there previously that we're now going to go back and catch up for EN. Does that make sense?
You lost me in the middle there, but okay.
You were saying that, for example, in April of 2018, your beneficiary, you know, there was something there, right? The beneficiary would have been eligible except for the date. We are trying to fulfill the scenario where in April 2018, there wasn't anything there because the field office hadn't taken any action. So we're trying to make sure the things that we're not missing things, right, that we're not being unfair so that everybody can get reconciled and get the payments that they would have been due if the information had been there at the time. In your example,
okay,
the information was already there, right, but we couldn't use it because of the 24-month rule, and that information had been there directly for, you know, months prior to that.
Okay. That makes sense.
But, if, you know, if you want to come help us with your specific example, you know,
mm-hmm.
feel free to, you know, reach out and do that.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. And, Sandy, we will take one more from the phone line, and then we're going to see if we have any questions in the chat. So do we have any others in the phone queue right now?
Yeah, we have three, actually. So we'll take the next one. It's from Susan Hopper.
Okay.
Yes, I was wondering if you could. Hello. Could you possibly walk us through the process of requesting a payment through the ticket portal using proof of relationship when trial work level earnings are already proven? I've tried to do it before, but it wasn't clear to me if I was doing it correctly.
Right. Well, what I would suggest, and I definitely want you to get the information, but in the essence of time, what I would suggest, if you reach out to the EN Payments Help Desk, they will be able to help you with that because it is a process, and they may be able to provide you with some resources of how to walk through that. But I would definitely encourage you to contact them because I don't want to rush you through the process on this call. But if you reach out to the help desk, they can actually help you get through that. And like I said, I will provide that information in a few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Sandy, if you don't mind, I'd like to find out from Adele what questions we have in the chat.
Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, I hope I can do everyone justice. We have a lot of great questions, and if we do not get to them, we do have them all logged in, so don't worry. We'll get your response. And so let's go ahead and go right into questions that we have here. Okay. Lori from Wyoming County Community Action would like to know, are workforce ENs still exempt from needing to submit pay stubs for first payments through the new TPA?
So, Adele, I'm sorry, could you repeat mm-hmm. the question?
Yes, ma'am. Are workforce ENs still exempt from needing to submit pay stubs for first payments through the new TPA?
I want to say yes,
Kim,
because workforce.
Kim,
oh,
Kim
go
this
ahead.
Is Eric. Yeah, yes, that nothing, unless it's told you it's changed, nothing has changed at all. So, yes, that is correct.
Thank you, Kara.
All right. Maria from Cassandra Associates. I was curious, she received an email from uit.edata.mailbox@ssa.gov, and it was about eData website access. So she just wanted to make sure that if we had sent anything from that type of mailbox, she's checking to see if it's a legit email.
I'll let someone from SSA address that, since she mentioned that it came from an SSA.
Yes. I'll repeat the email one more time just to make sure. It is uit.edata.mailbox@ssa.gov, and it was regarding eData website access.
Katie, are you guys familiar with that email?
I would hesitate to answer this on the spot. We can make sure we answer it in the question.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. And Adele, I'll take one more for you, and then we'll see if we have any in the phone queue.
Okay. When does the current RFA expire?
This is Kara. It expires tomorrow. The RFA is already expired, I should say.
Okay.
So for new ENs, people applying to become an EN, they are applying to the one that was sent to everybody, I believe, on September 21st. And it is due for all ENs to return to Social Security by tomorrow. And if they're not returned, you are subject to termination.
Thanks for that, Kara.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Adele. And Sandy, do we have any questions in the phone queue?
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. We have a question from Sandra Abbott.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
Hello, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Okay.
Shall we take the next question?
Yes. Yes, please, Sandy.
All right. So the next question comes from Marilyn Brewer.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
My question is going back to the earlier question that the Ian asked in regards to the COVID and back to March. I still feel like there's some confusion there. If we made a request for an outcomes payment sometime between March and like now, and it was denied because the individual received a cash payment, it was my understanding from the past all EN payments call, the EN did not need to request that again. They were going to be reviewed. Can you clarify? Are we to request those again?
Okay, so let me just make sure I understand the question right. So you're saying during the time, like at the peak of the COVID or the pandemic, that if you requested an outcome payment from March until current, but it was denied because the beneficiary was still receiving a federal cash benefit. You were asking if would you need to resubmit for that payment request? Or?
Correct, Kim, because I thought there was mention on the last call by someone that if you were an EN and you had made this request and now, you know, time had passed and they realized that some of those payments, cash benefit payments were made in error because of the pandemic, having no personnel at the offices, that they were going to, that they, meaning payments, was going to look at those requests again. But it kind of sounds like we need to request them again.
Yes, because I'm not familiar with that. But, yes, if you submitted a payment request and it was denied previously, then it is the responsibility of the EN to resubmit your request.
And, of course, we will look at this as a new request. We would do, you know, an assessment of the information submitted. We would use the information in SSA's database to make a payment determination. So, yes, anything that's been denied, not just due to, you know, this unfortunate pandemic, but any time an EN has a case that has been denied, they're going to need to, they would need to resubmit their payment request for us to perform another assessment of that.
Kim, this is Katie Scherbinger from SSA. I did want to jump in. That example there we are talking about is ePay. So you had requested an outcome payment, but the beneficiary was not in suspense yet. I believe I advised that that's what the ePay is for. So when the next ePay file does come out, and the file that's going to come out right after the November 1st date, in that ePay file, the staff is going to look through and they're going to see that your beneficiary, you know, was not in suspense because of the temporary pause we took during COVID, right? The beneficiary's records were still in current pay, so you were not eligible last time for an outcome payment. With the ePay file coming up, your beneficiary should appear on the list, and we will evaluate that beneficiary. And if the field office has put them into suspense, you will get that outcome payment automatically through ePay. And I will add, as long as, you know, you've passed your services and support through you. So that is the intention of the ePay file, and timing this temporary policy change with the ePay file is that we expect to catch these outcome payments during the file.
Okay.
Thank you, Katie, for clarifying that. There's just one more related question. Is that only applicable to tickets that are currently assigned? What if the individual was unassigned in the month of July? That would not apply. Is that correct?
That is
the
correct.
ePay
because,
scenario.
Right, because unassigned tickets are not on the ePay file.
Thank you.
Right. And just remember, if the beneficiary unassigned, right, if it's like what I was talking about earlier with the certification of services, so if that case, the beneficiary unassigned the case, unassigned the ticket, then, of course, you can still submit because SSA may pay an EN, you know, up to 12 payments within an 18-month period. So you can submit for request, but you would need to make sure you include the certification of services.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am. Hopefully that answers.
And if the EN unassigns, what's the EN have to do?
If a ticket has been unassigned by the EN is no longer eligible for any payments after the unassignment date. So there's nothing else for the EN to do at that point because you would not be eligible for
claimant. What if the claim month was before the unassignment date is what I meant.
Oh, sorry. Yes, then that changed. Yes, so if you're requesting a claim month before unassignment, then you can definitely submit that, and we will make an assessment based on the information submitted by the ENs and the information available to us in SSA's database. So, yes, if it's for a claim month prior to the unassignment month, then you can submit for payment.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Sandy, we'll take one more from the phone lines. Do we have any?
Yes, there are three of them. We'll take the next one from Barbara Valmont.
Okay. You can go ahead with this.
Hello? Can you hear
me? Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. In regards to the RFA, is there a time limit that we need to submit it by tomorrow?
Close of business tomorrow is fine.
Close of business. Okay. Thank you. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you, Kara. And now, Adele, you let me know you have quite a few questions in the chat, so you can go ahead, please.
Yes, ma'am. Is the POR form required for workforce ENs?
They are eligible to receive Phase 1 Milestone 1s via ePay. So, no, they do not have to submit a POR for Phase 1s.
Okay. Are proven and verified earnings the same thing?
Yes.
Can the employer prepared earnings statement be used in place of beneficiary's pay stubs to validate employment?
You can use the employer prepared earnings statement for your earnings verification, but when requesting a phase one milestone 1 through 3, you still must submit a completed POR with that. But if you're just submitting employee prepared earnings statement for phase twos or outcomes, then that information is fine as without the POR, of course, because the POR is only required for phase one milestones 1 through 3.
Okay. What if a ticket holder has not worked for 24 months? Do we still need to get payroll information?
If the beneficiary has not worked for 24 months, I'm not sure.
Do we still, right, I think that question is from Irene, so maybe if she can chime in, that's...
Right, because I think this should be a
different one.
Yeah, because I think
no
there should
problem.
Be a little bit more, another part, so I can see if they haven't worked in 24 months. The only thing I would say is it wouldn't affect your 18-month look back, but I'm not sure if that was the complete question. So, yes, if you're what's your name, Adele?
Oh, I switched over.
Okay, never mind. Oh, you can go ahead. But, yeah,
it's okay.
We need a little bit more.
All right. So this must have been in a different section. What if it's a phase one that is a shift to outcome after the first phase one milestone one is paid? Lisa's asking this question, but I think we need more information for that one too.
Yes.
Okay.
Adele, this is Deborah. Could you read that again?
Mm-hmm. So this was very early on, so it's at the very beginning of the presentation. What if it's a phase one that is shifted to outcome after the first phase one milestone is paid?
Okay. I think what they're asking, and I may be wrong, but I'm just trying to answer the question, if this is what I believe the EN is asking, is a phase one milestone was paid, and then the beneficiary went into outcome phase. So what happens after that? And what happens after that, the phase one milestone one was paid, the beneficiary went into an outcome phase, meaning suspense due to work and earnings, then no more milestones. The EN would not be eligible for phase one or phase two milestone payments until after outcome number 12 was paid, and then if there were any available failed phase one milestones, meaning that there were no exclusions for the phase one, two, three, and four due to look-back earnings, then the EN might be eligible to receive any of the milestone payments prior to receiving the outcome payments during reconciliation. And reconciliation occurs after outcome number 12. And I know that sounds kind of convoluted, but basically if a beneficiary goes into outcome status before all milestones are paid, the EN may be eligible to receive those milestones that were available. Again, available meaning that there were no exclusions on them after outcome number 12 is paid. And once outcome number 12 is paid, the system automatically receives an alert that reconciliation payments are due. I hope that answers the question.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Tennessee.
I know that we do have a lot of questions in the chat, and I just wanted folks to know that we will get those questions answered. I see someone indicated that they've asked several questions and they're not addressed. So we have those questions, so rest assured that we'll get to those. But if there's some immediate responses that you need, I believe, Kim, we have the information for the help desk available to them.
Right. Thank you, Adele. And I just wanted to say that as well, because we do get a lot of questions that come in through the chat. And just like Adele said, what I would suggest is that if you have a very case-specific question, so if you have a question about a particular case, I would suggest that you would utilize the resources that we have available. And those resources, so we do have the Ian Payments Help Desk. We also have the Systems Help Desk. So you can call our help desk Monday through Friday, and I think it's on the slide 14. You actually can see the contact information. So we do have the toll-free number with the different options that you will select based on the need of the call. Or you could send an email to our help desk, right? And that slide 14 actually shows you that as well. So you have Ian Payments Help Desk at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And if you have questions related to ticket assignment or the website or the ticket portal, like the one lady had questions about how you would you know, you wanted us to walk you through the process. So definitely, you know, you can contact Ian Systems Help at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And this information, as I mentioned, is provided in our presentation from today's call. So we are at the top of the hour. And again, I just don't want anyone to feel that we don't want your answers, your questions to go unanswered. So please, please make sure you reach out to the help desk so that you can get the information that you need. Now, we are only about 2 minutes past the hour, so what I would like to do is I would like to take one more question from the phone line, and then we'll take one more question from the chat. So, Sandy, could you put through one more question, please?
Absolutely. The question comes from Sandra Abbott.
Yes. Good afternoon. I just had two quick questions for the ePay. Is that, how many cases do you have to have in order to use that?
How many questions do you have to? I'm sorry. How many cases do you have to have for
cases,
ePay?
I mean, yes.
Okay. So there's nothing that's required from the ENs for receiving ePay. ePay file is an electronic system, or it's a file that we receive with a list of Social Security numbers for ENs that are eligible for ePay. So you don't have to request it if you are eligible for ePay, and if you have an SSN on ePay and there are available payments that meet the criteria, then we will automatically make those payments. You do not have to request any payments. The only thing to remember is Phase 1 milestones 1 through 4 are not on the ePay file, so if you're requesting those payments, then you would have to submit those through the portal. If a ticket has been unassigned from your agency, either by the EN or the beneficiary, those cases will not be on ePay either. So you don't have to request anything. There's no limit of the number of cases. You just have to make sure that your EN is eligible to be on ePay, which of course that just means that you have passed your annual service and supports reviews, you're not on hold, should be on the ePay file, or you should have SSN on the ePay file.
Okay, thank you for that answer. And the second question is for the proven relationship. I think that's the one where you're identifying the services for the beneficiary. Is usually at like one that has one line. Is that sufficient, or do you have to submit a progress note
Okay, so when you're providing proof of relationship, I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? I just want to make sure I understand it.
Yeah, when you're providing information showing services that you did with the beneficiary, you're providing evidence that you've talked to the beneficiary. For that information, do you have to send a progress note explaining the services for those particular days that you did meet with the person? Or I think it gives you one line where you could put the date and then what you've done. Is that sufficient, or do you need the progress note?
Yes, you want to just make sure that you provide the date and whatever took place, whatever services you provided. If you wanted to provide your progress notes, that would be fine.
But we just have to make sure that whatever information you provide, that we're able to look to make sure that it was provided within that milestone range. So you want to provide your date of service, and you want to provide a brief description of what actually took place on that day or during that time. So if you provided services, you know, from on January 1st, January 12th, January 25th, you want to provide us with an example or details of what took place on those dates, what services were provided.
Okay. And hi, Kim. This is Deborah. The form itself has like a chart with the date and description of services provided or contact. So you can list multiple dates and services on that form. It's not just one line. You can list list as many services as you might have with multiple dates on the same form.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, ma'am. And Adele will take the last question from the chat, please.
Okay. Sometimes if you don't ask during the time of the presentation, it's a little difficult to see where the question fits in. So bear with me. We did broadcast where the presentation is available, so hopefully that was received. Okay. This was asked early on during the call as well. Would we have to resubmit the case payment information in order to receive an outcome payment? So that was very early on in the call. So if you think back to what we were discussing at the beginning of the call.
I'm sorry, Dale. You sound muffled. I can't understand what you're saying.
Oh, let's move this mic right here.
Okay.
Would we have to resubmit the case payment information in order to receive an outcome payment? That's a different question, and these questions are from early on.
Okay. I think what Katie, I'm just going to connect it to what Katie was saying, or let me just say this. On the ePay file, we will process all available payments. We have in the past encouraged ENs to not submit the outcome payments via the portal because we, you know, if they are available to the EN, we will go ahead and make those payments. That doesn't mean that you cannot submit. If you want to submit, you can. But if we're making the payment through ePay, then there's no need for the ENs to have to submit any type of information. If you're not eligible for ePay, then yes, you have to resubmit for outcomes or whatever payment that you were denied. But if it's caught on ePay file, then no, there's nothing required. And I think what Katie mentioned earlier to the EN, they were talking about cases that were denied previously because, you know, the field officers were not conducting the reviews, and so the ENs were continuing to submit and they were being denied. And I think what Katie was saying was that if, you know, the field officers are back now performing those reviews, and if your SSN is on the ePay file, even though it was previously denied when you submitted for payment, if the benefits have updated, you know, we're going to do a research, and if it's there, we'll make the payment. So like you said, Adele, it was early on, so it's kind of different. If it's ePay, you do not have to submit anything. If not, then yes, you have to submit information. Hope that answered the question. All right, we're all good with that one, Adele?
Yes, ma'am. Like I said, we've logged all the questions and we'll submit them for you and your team to review. So I hope nobody feels, oh, no, my question wasn't answered. We'll get to those and provide responses.
Yes. All right. Well, Adele, thank you so much for providing those information through the chat. Thank you, Sandy, for opening up the phone line. So, and I just want to say thank you to all of our participants today who took the time out to join us for the final All EN Payments call of 2020. Thank you for your time. I did want to note that the next scheduled All EN Payments call will be held on Tuesday, January the 26th of 2021, which is right around the corner. Again, please make sure if you have any questions, your questions were not answered, please make sure you're reaching out to the available resources. You're reaching out to the EN Payments Help Desk to get the assistance that you need. But again, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to speaking with you all again on January the 26th of 2021. Please enjoy the rest of your day, and please make sure you all stay safe. Thank you so much.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.